When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs, where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. The topic of our podcast today is the murder of Chandra Scherer, a little 12-year-old girl that was murdered in Madison, Indiana, back in 1992. She was kidnapped, tortured, and finally burned to death by four other teenage girls. I know. I'm sorry.
Again.
Well, it's not, it doesn't have a
I would like a surprise ending.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Has she been introduced yet?
No, she hasn't.
How come she gets to talk and I don't
neither,
get to talk?
Well, you're not supposed to be talking either. This is my segment.
She has thrown protocol out the window, so why do I have to abide by it?
We're all off our game. It's been a while since we've done one of these. Seems like it's been weeks, but I know it's only been like a week, but... Anyway, welcome everyone to History Dweebs, and our topic, as I said, is the murder of Chandra Scherer, and we're going to talk about this really horrific event that occurred back in 1992. But before we do, let me introduce our panel. Very pleased to have in our studio today the very lovely and talented, the Queen of Mean, the Empress of Evil, Pill Poppin', Penis Lovin', Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm good, Timmy. How are you?
I am well. We have new equipment.
Yes, but it was not tested before I got here, which I feel like is the height of unprofessionalism.
We kind of had
you guys set it up.
Tinnies. We're working on some technical aspects of the.
But we got three new microphones.
I don't understand though. You guys set it up and you didn't test it.
Was you here to help?
Talk to the colonel.
Like I was so much help when I was sitting here.
Talk to the colonel because it was his job and he had one job.
One job.
So we decided in the interest of time, we're going to record this with our older equipment. But in the near future, hopefully our next podcast will have all the technical issues.
The echo was gone when we was talking into his other mic.
Oh yeah, no echo at all. So it's going to be nice. It's going to be nice. But we just don't know what we're doing. So, but we will get that ironed out. In the meantime, we're going to use this microphone. But our microphone was donated to us from my mom. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Dottie.
Three microphones
and a
mixer.
All we need is a turntable.
Yeah. And all we need is for it to work.
Well, that too.
Yeah. Well, it works. It's just we can't figure it out.
You know, I'm fairly certain it's something in the GarageBand settings that I'll talk to Taylor's producer tonight and have him walk me through it.
Excellent.
Yeah, have a teenager tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, he's about 23 years old. He does a lot of bands around Chicago.
Well, when I come in here this morning before we start, and we had the new microphones all set up. Of course, you know, they're not working, but they're all set up.
Looking so pretty.
And I was telling Brandy that now, you know, I was thinking, you know, at some point we could get like out of this podcast and shut it down. You know, it's been like 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't going for bonanza here, you know, like a 25-year run. I mean, I thought we'd
bonanza.
Bonanza. So I thought, you know, we do a year, and then I thought, oh, that's good, you know. And then I thought, well, we get to 100 shows, and that's good. Well, we're like 160 or something.
Yeah.
We're prolific.
Well, we are, but, you know, at some point, all good things have. I mean, you know, Gunsmoke ended.
I feel like he keeps dropping us hints.
He keeps dropping, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But see, now, because my mom, my dear mother, went out and bought us new microphones, now I feel obligated to keep this thing alive. But well, I got a solution for that.
You wanted it to die on the vine, didn't you?
I really did. But now I have a solution.
Even though it was his idea.
Well, we did it. We've done almost 200 shows. 160
And we're still cranking.
Yeah. We're but amazing. I mean, this wasn't a lifetime obligation. I thought we'd do like a year.
Listen to him.
But anyway, I have a plan. Because, you know, I would feel guilty of getting out of this, stopping the podcast, since my mother went and, you know, bought us new microphones and equipment. So I'm going to propose that I be voted off the podcast, hashtag Timmy Exit, so that we're going to have a referendum. And if
Trexit.
Yeah.
It's a Trexit.
Yeah, it's Timmy Exit. Timmy Exit. So hashtag Timmy Exit.
Actually, it's Timex.
Timex is good. That's fine. So I want to see that start trending so that my mom will be convinced that people want me off the podcast, and I can just turn it over to you two, and you will do it.
Well, that's a bad idea.
I'm not sure how that would... that seems like a bad idea to me.
That's what I said.
Well, then we have to have some timeline when we're going to end this thing, because I didn't. This wasn't a lifetime obligation on my part.
Well, we don't have to talk about it right now.
You know, I keep feeling like you're... Little Joe, Timmy.
Okay, I've got to introduce. You're not even introduced yet.
Yeah, Chuck.
I'm sorry.
Let me introduce the most dangerous man in podcasting today, the very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Chuck?
You know what, Timmy? I'm just trying to get through this all. My wife is... Or not my wife, my boys, someone very, very close to their family just had a stroke, and my wife and them are on their way down to see how she's doing, but she's not supposed to make it through the day. Ugh. So.
And you feel like doing this?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
He's here.
She would
clearly doesn't bother him.
She would
that
clearly
much.
Want me to do it. And
carry on.
She listened to the podcast occasionally. She liked the Colonel. The Colonel was her favorite.
Make it past.
I don't think any of that's true.
And she is very. I'll make this brief story, but
I doubt it.
When the twins were born, we had a babysitter and everything lined up. So this woman, she took the woman that we had as a babysitter. After about 2 weeks, Renee decided she was not fit to handle her children.
Mm-hmm.
Because one day Renee came in and had one of the boys had a wet diaper. And she did not feel that they were getting the proper attention they needed. So, and there was some other things. I mean, but you know Renee's a lunatic. So we had to find another sitter. And this woman, who was Renee's mother's best friend,
mm-hmm.
said, well, you know, I'm off work for 4 weeks. She worked for the waterworks, and she got a furlough every week, or a 6-week furlough every year. She said, I'm off work for the next 4 weeks. I will watch the boys until you find somebody else.
Really nice of her.
It was nice of her. And at the end of that 4 weeks, we had another babysitter. We had everything lined up. And the last day, the woman said, if you are happy with me watching the boys, I will quit my job and continue to watch the boys.
Oh, really nice.
And she did. And so the boys grew up really being, this was their Nana. You know, mm-hmm. she was closer to them, really, than either of the grandmothers were.
Right.
And so she unfortunately, she had a stroke. And, but we know, Devil, you had a death in your family.
I did.
So we're
yeah,
very sorry about that.
Yes, we are.
We're very sorry for Dave, and our thoughts are with him.
Yes.
So it's been a little bit, it's been a tiny bit depressing, Timmy. And then you have all the, we weren't going to talk about the election, but I think that's made people very tense and very, you know, I think it just made, you know, the whole election cycle made people, it just wore people out. I think it wore people down.
And that's why we have to do this podcast, so we can entertain people and cheer him up.
So we're gonna cheer you up by telling you about a little girl that got murdered and chopped up and went to the wood chipper. And
absolutely. Well, I had a different, I had a more of a lighthearted story for today, but, you know, our people kind of like, our listeners kind of like.
We got some messed up people.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, those of you who support our podcast.
Thank you for supporting the arts.
Yes. That's Alicia and Chip, Cindy Lou, Andy Happ, Bridget, Angelo, Jennifer Siemens, whose son Hunter is just turning 7 this week, so happy birthday, Hunter. Patty Wooten, Charlie, our friend from Insight Podcast, Brandy McBride, Amber Scoville, Jahara, Leslie Hager, and we have a new sponsor on Patreon, the incredible, most dangerous mud around Rudy Walters.
Rudy Walters is a. I came home and he said, "Dad,
I didn't know he got a job."
I'm
a
throw. Oh, Rudy?
Yeah, Rudy.
Rudy's paid by the government.
Uh huh.
He has a disability.
He's an assassin.
Yeah, wow. Rudy.
Clearly,
Rudy's a trained assassin for the government, and he actually with the we did have the election with the new president. He called us up and wanted to know if Rudy could be part of his Secret Service detail.
I see.
But Rudy. Rudy likes to...
Rudy is only given a dollar. You don't get to go on and on about him.
Yeah.
Hey, technically, he's a sponsor, Timmy.
He's giving a dollar, of which 20 cents will go to taxes. So he's really only giving us 80 cents. But thank you to all of our Patreon sponsors, including Rudy. If you would like to support the show, please go to patreon.com/historydweebs. Okay, let's get into the story of the murder of Shonda Scherer. Shonda was a 12-year-old girl who lived in the small town of Madison, Indiana.
That's not a neat little place.
It's not very far from here. Not far from here in Cincinnati. In 1992, she was abducted by several girls, four girls.
Now I know what murder we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you do, since we're getting ready to do it.
Okay, I thought this was one of those normal ones we did. I remember this one.
I'm glad.
This is horrible.
It is very horrific. The incident attracted international attention, both for the brutality of the murder and the young age of the killers, who raged in the age of, between the ages of 15 and 17 years old. Before we discuss the events leading up to Shonda's murder, let's first talk a little bit about her killers. They were four teenage girls.
Teenage girls are mean.
Who were involved in this. I'm going to give you a little background on each of them. But
I think we should actually send teenage girls over to fight ISIS.
Well, even then,
and boys, they get lost.
And if ISIS wins, you can say, big deal, you beat a bunch of teenage girls.
No, you just say, you know, all you'd have to do
they
is
wouldn't
say
lose.
To one of the girls, get a bunch of girls together and tell the most popular
ISIS
one.
ISIS would commit suicide. It'd be like mass suicide.
It would. And say, you know what? You know what?
She stole your
Lexi. That ISIS guy, and Lexi's going to be the most popular one in the group.
She always is.
That ISIS guy.
Thinks you're cute.
He says you're fat.
Oh, yeah.
And those girls that turn on them.
Well, you set it up so you get an Instagram from ISIS.
Yeah.
And one of them's fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let them follow Lexi's account and let her put a selfie up from the beach teenage girls are wont to do.
They'll be chopping their own heads off.
They would be. Once they reach the wrath of them getting like 10,000 texts a day.
Yeah, well, young girls can be mean, as this case proves. The four girls involved in this murder, they were Melinda Lovelace. She was 16. Lori Tackett was 17. Now, Melinda... this was like a puppy love triangle. This is how this kind of was the motivating factor for this. So Melinda was the main culprit, as she claimed that Shonda, the victim, stole her girlfriend. So Melinda Lovelace, age 16, Laura Tackett, age 17, and there were two younger girls, Hope Ripley, age 15, and Toni Lawrence, age 15. And we're going to get, these names are going to be throughout this, so hope it's not too confusing. But the two main culprits in this was Melinda, the older girls, Melinda, 16, and Laura Tackett, 17. The main catalyst for this murder was Melinda Lovelace. She was 16 years old. All these girls had kind of a troubled background, especially Melinda. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and I'll also talk a little bit about the other girls before we get into the actual, Brandy gets into the actual murder. Melinda Lovelace was born in New Albany, Indiana. This is southeast Indiana, on October 28, 1975. She was the youngest of three daughters born to her mother, Margie, and her father, Larry Lovelace. Now, Larry Lovelace was, he was a piece of work. He was drafted in the U.S. Army in Vietnam War. He was treated as, he earned some medals, was treated as a hero upon his return. But his wife described him later as a pervert.
Yeah.
Who would wear her and her daughter's underwear and makeup and was incapable of staying faithful. He had a mixture of jealousy and a fascination with seeing her having sex, his wife, with other men and women. They lived near New Albany throughout Melinda's childhood. Larry worked on and off at a railroad where he had, he would work, he'd get laid off, he would work, and he'd get laid off, kind of that cycle. In 1965, he went to work as a probation officer with the New Albany Police Department, but he was fired after 8 months.
For being a dirty perv?
Well, when he and his partner assaulted an African-American man who Larry accused of sleeping with his wife.
Well, I thought he liked that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, well, maybe.
You can't have it both ways,
yeah,
Larry.
You can't have you freaky and, yeah, have
and
it,
eat
it too. Yeah.
In 1988, Larry briefly worked as a postman. He quit after 3 months, and they found that he had taken most of the mail home and destroyed it.
Yes. He was a stand-up guy.
Yeah. Cliff Clavin.
David Berkowitz. Wasn't he a mailman?
He was a mailman. He was doing that.
Dude.
You know, mailman, being a mailman will make you crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, like you said, they should be in good shape, but, you know.
See, that's why my Fitbit, it disturbs me that I look at my mailman and I'm like, this fucking Santa Claus delivering gifts. He don't look like he's somebody in shape. He probably gets 35,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
He gets Timmy steps,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. So his wife, Margie, worked off and on. They were not, you know, they were financially okay. They lived in an upper middle class suburb of Floyd Knobs, Indiana.
Oh, wait a minute.
Floyd's Knob? They live on Floyd's Knob?
There's an upper middle class part to that?
I guess.
I'm confused.
Larry did not usually share his income with his family and impulsively spent money he earned on himself, especially firearms, motorcycles, and cars. He filed for bankruptcy in 1980. Extended family members often described the Lovelace's daughter as visiting their house as being hungry, apparently not getting enough food at home.
I would think so. Her dad's got a sweet ride in the driveway, but she ain't got no hamburgers.
Yeah, so apparently he's, you know, they're not, there's some neglect going on there. Through most of their relationship, Larry was unfaithful to Margie, and they had an open marriage.
Well, I would think that's the way it should be.
They would often visit bars in Louisville, Kentucky, which is just nearby, where he would pretend to be a doctor or a dentist and introduce his wife Margie as his girlfriend. They would then pick up men, and he would share her with some of his friends at the bar or from work. Now, she found this disgusting, but apparently she went along with it for a while.
They all say they find it disgusting, but they like it.
Can you cheat on someone in an open marriage?
I don't think so.
That's
all I did being open, right? During an orgy with another couple in their house.
Yes.
Couple doesn't constitute
Margie tried to commit suicide.
Well, that's a downer.
Well, yeah.
That's a boner killer.
That adds another that adds another element to the war.
It really does. An unexpected surprise.
Yeah.
Another mess I got to clean up.
So she apparently went along with these, you know, the sexcapades, but she wasn't really into it, apparently. She's trying to kill herself.
So she says, yeah.
Apparently she had tried to kill herself several other times as Melinda was growing up. Now, when Melinda was nine, some of this is allegations, so I've got to be careful. But when Melinda was nine, Larry had his wife Margie gang raped, after which she tried to drown herself again. So
she tried to drown herself?
Yeah, she tried to drown herself.
What the fuck? You can't find another way to do it? She's trying to drown herself?
Man, maybe your husband's having you gang raped.
Did she hold herself underwater?
I don't know. I don't know. Or maybe she just...
The fuck is that?
Maybe she just, you know, drunk a lot of Fresca. I don't know.
Jesus
After Christ. The incident, though, she refused to have sex with him for a month. He violently raped her as their daughters witnessed this, including Melinda.
I'm setting up a guy that you would want to kind of hold out on.
Yeah.
He just had you gang raped. How are you going to cut him off?
So in the summer of 1986, after she would not let him go home with two women that they picked up at a bar.
What a bitch.
Larry beat Margie so severely that she was hospitalized, and he was convicted of assault. The extent of Larry's abuse of his daughters and other children is a bit unclear. There's various court testimony that claimed he fondled Melinda as an infant.
Ew.
Molested Margie's, his wife's 13-year-old sister early in the marriage, and molested a cousin who was between the ages of 10 to 14.
God.
But, again, this is just court testimony, allegations. None of this was, I guess, followed up on. Both older girls, though,
why would you do that?
Not Melinda, but her older sister said that he molested them. And although Melinda didn't admit to any molestation, she did sleep with him in the same bed until she was 14. Yeah. So, which is a little bit unusual, I guess. In court, one of the cousins described an incident in which Larry tied all three sisters in a garage and raped them in succession. This is their cousins. Yeah. But the other two would not confirm. The other two cousins would not confirm that. So a lot of allegations.
Anyway. What he said, she said there.
Yeah. Larry was verbally abusive to his daughters, apparently. He fired a gun at Michelle in He fired a gun in Melinda's direction when she was seven, intentionally missing her. Well.
He's a good dad.
Well, that's some.
He was also embarrassed by his children. He would embarrass his children by finding their underwear and smelling it in front of other family members.
Huh.
Which is a bit odd.
Did it raise a red flag to anybody?
Yeah, apparently not. For 2 years...
I love the smell of underwear.
Oh, these are little kids.
That's some fava beans.
Smells like victory.
For 2 years, beginning when Melinda was five, the family was deeply involved with the Graceland Baptist Church. Larry and Margie gave a full confession and renounced their drinking and swinging while they were members of the church. Larry became a Baptist preacher.
There you go.
And Margie became a school nurse. The church later arranged for Melinda to be taken to a motel room with a 50-year-old man for a 5-hour exorcism.
Well, those things happen.
Yeah. I don't know what was going on with her. She needed to be in. But apparently it doesn't work, as we learn later on.
The devil was in there.
Yeah, the devil really was. Larry became a marriage counselor with the church.
He should have.
Yeah.
Clearly qualified.
And acquired a reputation for being... a bit forward with the other women.
Oh, imagine.
And eventually attempting to rape one of them.
Old habits.
He seems very rapey to me.
He is very rapey. You got to call no rapes. He's out of the gate on that guy.
Just like,
well, these are allegations. We don't know for sure, but he does seem to have quite a few allegations.
You know what is... Where there's blazing forest, there's usually fire.
Yeah, there's a fire there. So after the incident, the raping incident, the Loveless parents, they left a church and returned to their returned to drinking and their open marriage. So the whole church thing didn't work. The whole Christianity thing didn't work out for
them. Well, the raping thing will get you excommunicated from a church, Timmy.
Yeah. Are you sure? Mm-hmm. And... In November 1990, Larry was caught spying on Melinda and one of her friends.
There you go.
And Margie attacked him with a knife, sending him to the hospital when he attempted to grab it. Margie, as she normally does in these situations, attempted to kill herself.
Well, she does.
Couldn't a bitch just get a toaster and jump in the bathtub?
I mean, anything. Take some pills. Do something. Did she try and drown herself again?
I don't have the details of what she did, but she was not very good at killing herself. During this attack, the daughters...
She's an underachiever.
The daughters called their local authorities. And after the incident, Larry filed for divorce and moved to Florida.
This bitch is crazy. I'm out of here.
Melinda felt crushed, however, because she was especially close to her father, and he remarried. Now, he sent her letters for a while to Melinda, often toying with her affection, and then eventually he just stopped contacting her at all. So that's Melinda Loveless. She's kind of one of the main instigators here. She's one of the Loveless interests.
So she's leaving that house with a pretty nice attitude.
She's fucked up out the gate.
The next one is the other older teenager, Lori Tackett, age 17. She was born in Madison, Indiana on October 5th, 1974. Her mother was a fundamentalist Pentecostal Christian.
Yes.
Oh.
And her father was a factory worker with two felony convictions from the 1960s.
There we go.
Now, Lori claimed that she was molested twice as a child at age 5 and at age 12. In May of 1989, her mother discovered that she was changing jeans at school. Mm-hmm. And they had a big fight.
Changing into jeans?
Apparently, they went loud. You gotta wear denim skirts.
Yeah,
well, she was going to school and changing into jeans. And there was a big fight, and her mother attempted to strangle her. Huh. Social workers became involved. And this is when she was 15. Social workers became involved, and Lori's parents agreed to some unannounced visits and to some intervention.
That seemed to be the problem with the other family. The man was making unannounced visits.
Yeah. Lori and her mother came into conflict at one point. They would go into, periodic conflict. At one point, Lori's mother went to Hope Ripley's house. That was Ripley's. That was one of her friends.
Believe it or not.
Because... Lori and Hope Ripley was friends, and her mother, Lori's mother, learned that Hope's father had a Ouija board that the girls were using.
Oh, shit.
And she went to there and demanded that the Ouija board be burnt and the house to be exercised. So,
did they put the house on the treadmill? What did they do?
Yeah.
This house needs exercise. It's getting too big.
Lori became increasingly rebellious after her 15th birthday and also became fascinated with the occult. She would attempt to impress her friends by pretending to be possessed by the spirit of Deanna the vampire.
Yes.
Was you ever into the goth stuff when you was in school?
I dated someone who was into goth.
No.
Wasn't Inky a goth?
No, Indy was into goth. Indy, not Inky.
Inky.
Inky was, no. She Inky was just into tats.
Oh, okay.
Indy was into goth.
No, mm-hmm. When I was in school, all the goth kids were skaters.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, Lori got became into the occult. She began to engage in self-harm, which, okay, I'm not going to talk about, especially after 1991.
What the fuck?
Hold on, we're talking about, now this gets into pretty ugly shit. You don't want to talk about self-harm.
Okay. I dated someone who was in the
raping,
self-harm.
Raping, murdering, yeah. Sodomizing.
I know, but I don't want to, it's personal stuff. I dated someone who was a cutter. Not because they were dating me, but I mean when they were sure when they were younger.
So that relationship worked out good for them then, Timmy.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, yeah. So
I myself have been known to cut myself from time to time.
Well,
Timmy.
Yeah, me too, but not on purpose.
I look like I've been purpose. In a knife fight.
Yeah, well, I've been stabbed, Renee, the Mrs. Colonel.
Well, yeah, okay. Now, seriously, when you know young ladies cut themselves, there's usually.
Yeah, usually there's underlying issues.
Yeah, and usually it's sexual abuse. So she began to engage in self-harm, especially after 1991 when she began dating a girl who was involved in the practice of self-harm. Her parents discovered the self-mutilation and checked her into a hospital in 1991. She was prescribed antidepressants and released. 2 days later, her girlfriend and Tony Lawrence cut their wrists deeply, and they were returned to the hospital for treatment of the wound, and she was admitted to the psych ward. She was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, much like our friend Brandy here, and confessed that she had experienced hallucinations.
Borderline crazy.
Hallucinations. So, she, you know, she's a sick little girl. She was discharged, and she dropped out of high school in 1991. She stayed in Louisville for a time, and then she moved back to Indiana, and that's when she met Melinda Lovelace, who we just discussed.
Am I the only one that keeps thinking about Deep Throat when they say this Lovelace girl?
No. No. I think of Lydia Lovelace, the singer.
The singer?
Yeah. She met Melinda. The two did not become quick friends, but they kind of had some conflicts, but later on they become friends.
I would change myself to lovable.
Yeah.
If I was Loveless.
In December, in December of 1991, Tackett moved to Madison again because her father had promised to buy her a car, but she spent most time running around with her friend Melinda Lovelace. Now, the other two girls involved in this murder were a bit younger, a couple years younger. One was Hope Ripley. Hope Ann Ripley, she's the one whose father had a Ouija board. She was born in June of 1976. Her dad was an engineer at a power plant. Her parents divorced in 84. They moved away.
So it sounds like she had a normal childhood.
Kind of, yeah. Well, yeah, kind of.
Except for burning the Ouija board.
Except,
no, they didn't do that.
Except for murdering this girl.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah. Previous to this.
Yeah,
incident.
The two younger girls had a much more reduced role in this murder, and Hope was one of them. So at 15, so when they moved away for a while, they went to Michigan, and her mother moved her back to Madison, Indiana, and then she became friends with Lori Tackett. And another girl named Toni Lawrence, who we'll discuss in a minute. So this is how those kind of all met. Her parents did not like her hanging around Lori Tackett and Toni Lawrence because she thought they were a bad influence.
Vicki Lawrence?
That would prove to be correct.
Could you hang out with her?
Vicki Lawrence, yeah, I don't know. Is she still alive?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
She did the night
slide. That's not that the last one
okay,
out
no, no,
in Georgia.
No singing. We don't have the other microphones yet. No singing.
That's not that the hungry innocent man.
Stop.
As with the other girls, Hope also began to self-harm at age 15. So that's three of the girls. Now let's talk about the fourth.
You couldn't keep a razor blade in the house around there.
Yeah. The fourth one was Toni Lawrence, T-O-N-I.
Sure.
She was born in Madison in 1976. She had apparently come from a good family. She was close friends with Hope Ripley, who we just discussed. She was abused by a relative at age 9 and raped by a teenage boy at age 14, although the police were unable to issue an order to keep the boy away from her. She went into counseling. I guess they didn't have enough evidence. Went into counseling, and after the incident, but she didn't follow through with her counseling. She started to do self-harm as well, and she attempted suicide
when she was in the eighth grade. So we got Melinda Lovelace, who is 16, Laura Tackett, who is 17. They kind of take the lead in these murders, this murder. And then we got Hope Ripley and Tony Lawrence, who are both 15, and they play kind of a supporting role, but they don't, they're kind of along for the ride. Okay.
To recap.
Then the two other people involved in our story, that's why I'm going through these, because there's many different characters here, was the victim, Shonda Shearer, who was only 12 years old at the time, and her friend, Amanda Heaverin, who was 15. Now, Amanda had been, this sounds like a bunch of little girls getting around, you know, going around gossiping, but Amanda was the girlfriend of Melissa Lovelace, Melinda Lovelace.
So we got some lesbian thrown in.
These are lesbian relationships.
Too.
Melinda Lovelace was her girlfriend was Amanda Heaverin. Both of Amanda was 15. And
were these girls all on the same softball team?
I don't know. But Melinda became angry because Amanda had left her and started sharing and spending time with Shonda, age 12.
Oh.
See, and that's weird and wrong. Because if that had been a boy.
Yeah, she's 15.
Because if the older one had been a boy, everybody would have had many strokes.
Well, I don't think her parents knew about it. I saw her mother, Shonda's mother, interviewed, and she was really upset. She said that, you know, it was that Amanda was a predator. You know, she was 15, she was 12. There is an age difference there. So Shonda, let's talk about...
That smells syrup.
Let's talk about Shonda Shearer. Shonda was age 12. She was born in Pineville, Kentucky. Of course, Kentucky. You're very familiar with Pineville, Kentucky.
Kentucky. It's right
of course he
to,
is.
It's right next to Oakwood, Kentucky.
Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. She was born on June 6, 1979. June 6th.
Where the Oak Ridge Boys
were. Where was June 6th?
June 6th?
Mm-hmm.
6th of June, 1944, D-Day.
Yeah, but she was born in 1979.
Well, that would have been about, what, 20, 35, 45 years after?
Yeah, something like that. She was born to Stephen Shearer.
No relevance whatsoever.
Stephen and Jacqueline Shearer. And this is, this really is tragic because Stephen, after his daughter is killed, he drinks himself to death. So
I believe that was in my post, so I can just scratch that part off.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, you could put it as he went all leaving Las Vegas.
Is there anything? That is the depressing movie.
Is there anything else from my script you'd like to share that I can
No, I'm almost done with my part. Okay. I just want to tell you a little bit more about Shonda. Shonda attended 5th and 6th grade in Louisville before her parents moved. She was in cheerleading, volleyball, and softball teams. Her parents got divorced. The family moved in 1991 to New Albany. And she got in a fight with 16-year-old Amanda Heaverin. That's how they met, and they got put in detention together. At the time, Amanda was dating Melinda Lovelace. So she got in a fight with this 12-year-old Shonda. They got detention, and they became friends during
That's
detention.
That's a scrappy little girl right there.
Yeah, and well, apparently they liked the rough stuff because they started dating. So Amanda... Amanda leaves...
Some little boys Amanda, hair.
Amanda Heaverin leaves... Melinda, so Melinda Lovelace, so she can be with Shonda, okay?
I need a goddamn flowchart for all this.
That's what I mean. It is confusing. That's why I went through each person. Of course, this did not set well with Melinda because she thought Shonda was trying to steal her girlfriend. And Brandy's going to tell you all the drama that happens
and
next.
And you can't let that shit stand.
Well, you know what? If there wasn't a murder involved here, this is typical teenage drama, but...
Well, I'm not sure it's typical teenage drama when you got a bunch of... It sounds to me like all these girls were lesbians. Am I wrong?
At least some of them.
There was, like, interdating amongst all of them.
At least three-fifths of them.
At least three of them. But I'm Yeah. I don't... I mean, at least they dated each other. I don't know what they were...
So, in early October, Heaverin and Shearer attended a school dance.
Okay, this is Shonda and Amanda.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's just confusing all the names.
Where
Devil
Melissa,
hasn't been here for a long time, so we're just making sure you get all this right. are you on drugs at all right now?
Unfortunately, no.
Clean as a sober as a whistle.
Sober as a whistle.
Yes. Sober as a whistle.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sober as a whistle. That's
yeah,
me.
That's a phrase you don't hear very often.
Or ever.
And let's hope, I'm just going to interject this, we're going to release, are we releasing this today, Timmy?
Yes, probably.
If you see us on the national news, it's we have a trial going on today, and we are a little on edge.
Yeah.
Because there's a trial from a policeman who shot someone, and the trial is today, and they're waiting for the verdict.
Yeah, and I'd like to get home safely, so let's...
you have to ride the bus.
You're going to be walking right through Knockout Game neighborhood if it gets ugly.
I know.
I'm going to have to drive you home.
All right, continue, Brandy.
So they go to the school dance, and Loveless finds out about it, and she confronts them.
Can I take Rudy?
I'll say, oh, yeah, you take Rudy with you. That'll calm the crowd right down.
All right.
So although Heverin and Loveless never formally ended their relationship, Loveless had actually started to date an older girl.
What does that mean? Did they not go to
the... It means you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a lesbian in this town, is what that means.
There were softballs flying left and right. I bet they had a powder puff football team.
Well,
down
and
there.
You know what? And so if she's dating this older girl, then she needs to stop yammering. But
her dad is probably happy she's dating all these other girls because then he can, you know, sniff all her panties.
So after the dance, Melinda...
It's more panties, girl.
more panties, but you got panties all over the place. Dude, lesbians wear panties,
yes,
the devil.
Yes. Okay.
I
know lesbians and they wear panties.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
They're
not free balling all the time. They gotta,
I don't know.
You know. All right. So after the dance, Melinda begins to openly discuss killing Shonda and threaten the little girl in public. Concerned about the effects of their daughter's relationship with Amanda Heverin. Well, see. So they did know about it. Shonda Shear's parents arranged for her to transfer to Our Lady of Perpetual Help School.
Oh.
And it was a Catholic school, in case you didn't pick up on that, in New Albany, where she joined the girls' basketball
team. That sounds pretty parochial.
She's probably trying to pray away the gay.
New Albany, I believe it is.
New Albany?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said New Albany.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She has problems pronouncing words.
No, I mean, she's been through a major ordeal. We gotta give her a break.
Shut up, autopsy.
I think she had a stroke or something.
I think they might have given her a lobotomy.
So, Shauna, what's up? Because you're going to need to keep these girls straight, so to speak.
There ain't no way to keep these girls straight.
So to speak.
That ship already sailed.
Okay, so... Shonda's,
that rainbow flagship party sailed.
Boy, it did, didn't it? Dancing bears are out. So, okay.
I'm getting an idea. There's not a whole lot of Trump supporters in this crowd.
I don't think there's a lot of men. There's not a lot of boys here. Okay, so Shonda goes to Our Lady of the Perpetual Help or whatever. Okay, so she's gone.
All right.
So Shonda and Amanda Heverin started to grow apart.
Oh.
Distance.
Yeah.
And
what they say makes the heart grow fonder of someone else.
Something like that, yeah. And Shonda's parents felt that their plan...
I always thought it was big boobs makes the heart grow fonder, Timmy.
Shonda's parents felt that their plan had been successful.
Have your boobs shrunk some more, devil?
Oh, my God. Probably.
It's just a question. And we should add...
Are there adjustable bras? Like, you know, you can get those.
Bra.
You can get pants with adjustable waistline.
All bras are adjustable.
Okay.
We should add to our listeners, the devil was only here today because she came in here for a meeting with our oversight board. And
no, the cups are not adjustable.
No, the cups are not generally adjustable.
Right, that's what I meant.
But the back and the straps are.
Right, but the cups are the...
No, the cups are...
No, I know they're not, but can you buy them in case you go up and go down or...
Yes, you can.
Sideways? I don't know.
Down.
That's a special order if you go sideways.
I just wanted to say that...
There's no law saying I can't buy another bra. What the fuck?
Those are expensive,
They
man.
Are expensive. Bras are very expensive.
Well, that's expensive. There's no sense in that.
That's what I told the Mrs. Colonel. She pays
doing
like $40 for a bra.
Oh,
I'll hold your damn boobs. I'll walk around and hold your damn boobs all day. For like $23.
$23.
Yeah.
And lunch.
The devil came in here for a meeting today.
Yeah.
And it struck me how
how lovely she looked today. Yes, you got your haircut. You got your makeup on. You got, I mean, it's almost like you're a girl.
I'm like a real person.
You're like a girl.
I'm like a real girl.
Yeah, she's like a real girl now. So,
all right, are we done?
Yes.
I was being nice to you.
I know you were, and I appreciate that, which is better than the lobotomy slam that you gave me a minute ago. All right, so Melinda, you know, so Shonda's parents felt their plan had been successful. They're growing apart. It's all good. Melinda, however,
Bitch holds a grudge.
Well, bitch does hold a grudge, and she's, you know, it's one of those, she's swearing vengeance.
Yes.
She is continuing to express a strong hatred toward this little girl, blaming her for stealing her girlfriend, even though old girl is dating somebody else now.
And I'll tell you what, a lesbian blood oath is worse than a Sicilian blood oath.
Yeah. I think so.
They're like elephants. They don't forget anything. My daughter, she can tell you things I said when she was 9 years old that perturbed her.
All right. So on the night of January 10th, 1992, which was the year of our Lord that I graduated.
Oh, okay.
1992?
Uh-huh.
She had been married for 5 years by then.
Well, you all are old. So Tony Lawrence, Hope Rippey, and Lori Tackett took Tackett's car from Madison to Melinda Lovelace's house in New Albany.
Okay, so to recap.
So they're all four.
So to recap, these three girls get in the car and go to Melinda Lovelace's house. Right. All right. What kind of car was it, Timmy?
I don't know.
Are you sure?
It was a Ford Fairlane.
Might have been a Vega.
I bet it had a trunk, though. It does have a trunk.
It does have a trunk.
All right.
Plays a key role in.
Because they had junk in the trunk.
Lawrence. So, okay, so Tony Lawrence, while she was a friend of Tackett's, had not previously met Lovelace.
They get along swimmingly, though.
Though Hope Rippey had met her once before and had gotten along with her fine. So upon arrival, they borrowed some clothes from Lovelace, and she showed them a knife, telling them she was going to scare Shonda Shearer with it. Only Lovelace had ever met Shonda Shearer. Laura Tackett already knew of the plan to intimidate the 12-year-old girl, who has moved on with her life.
Yes, turned the page.
Right, she's turned the Bible page.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Lovelace explained to the two other girls that she disliked Shearer for stealing her girlfriend, Amanda Hevron. The four girls then got in this car and drove to Jeffersonville, Indiana, where Shearer lived. Melinda Lovelace brought along a knife and said she just intended to use the knife to frighten Shonda.
Yeah, if you're ever going out with someone and they got a knife or a gun, they just, I'm just going to scare the person.
That's a bullshit lie.
Yeah, go home.
Yeah. So they arrived at Shearer's house shortly before dark. So this is January, so, you know, they probably got there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was cold.
Melinda instructs Hope Rippey and Tony Lawrence to go to the door and introduce themselves as friends of Amanda Hevron's. Melinda told them to invite Shonda to come with them to see Amanda, who was waiting for them at the Witch's Castle, a ruined stone house also known as Mistletoe Falls, located on an isolated hill overlooking the Ohio River. So, sure.
Yeah, it's just a hangout spot, really.
So let's go do that.
Yeah.
Shonda was hesitant to go because she didn't know the girls and her parents were still awake. She asked the girls to return at midnight and she would go with them. To kill time, the girls crossed the river to Louisville and attended a punk rock show by the band Sunspring. Do you know the band Sunspring?
Mm-hmm.
Charles?
Yeah.
Around midnight, of course he does. Around midnight, they returned to Shonda's house and this time she agreed to go with them. When Shonda got into the car, she did not notice that Melissa Lovelace was hid under a blanket in the back seat with a dull knife. As they got in the car, Hope Rippey began questioning her about the relationship with Amanda Heverin just to piss off Melinda Lovelace. Lovelace finally decided she'd heard enough. She sprang out of the back seat and put the knife to Shearer's throat and began to interrogate her about her sexual relationship with Amanda Heverin. This bitch must be a hell of a lay.
I'll tell you what, because there ain't nothing scarier than somebody holding a knife to your throat and asking you what you've been doing sexually.
Yeah.
I know that's happened to you before. Now, I come home sometimes, Mrs. Colonel wants to know where I've been. I say, grocery store. She pins me up against a wall with a knife in my throat.
No, see, I know that's made up because she doesn't care where you've been most of the time. So, there you go. All right, so... They drive towards Utica, Indiana, to the witch's castle. At the witch's castle, they took this poor little girl who's crying, and they took her inside and they tied her arms and legs up with a rope. There, Lovelace taunted that she had pretty hair and wondered how pretty it would look if they were to cut it off, which frightened this little girl even more. Lovelace began taking off Shearer's rings and handing each to the girls. At some point, Hope Rippey had taken Shearer's Mickey Mouse watch and danced to the tune it played. Laura Tackett, sick of these bullshit games, started to describe the dungeon to Shearer, claiming it was filled with human remains and Shearer would be next.
Yeah, so they're trying to scare this little girl to death.
Subsequently, Tackett goes back to the car, where Lawrence followed her to retrieve her cherished smiley face sweater. What the fuck?
They made her undress.
Yeah. They returned with it and lit it on fire. But immediately they feared that the fire would be spotted by bypassing cars, so they left. During the car ride, Shearer continually just begged them to take her home. Tackett, because this is the early 90s, turned on a boombox sitting in her lap that played opera and mimicked Shearer, acting like she was crying and laughing.
Yeah, poor girl was probably scared to death.
And laughed with what she called the devil laugh. Lovelace ordered Shearer to slip off her bra, which he then handed over to Hope Rippey, who slid off her own bra and replaced it with Shearer's while steering the car. That's talent.
What if they had adjustable cups?
No.
Yeah.
So then, because they're bullshitting around changing clothes while they are driving, they get lost. So they stop and ask for directions at a gas station, where they covered Shearer with the blanket. They got back into the car and then became lost again and had to pull into another gas station. There, Tony Lawrence and Hope Rippey spotted...
I guess this was before GPS.
Yes. Well, she has a boombox in her lap, so probably...
Are we going to have time to do my story? Because I did a script for this.
Let's continue this first.
There, so at the second gas station, Tony Lawrence and Hope Rippey spotted a couple of boys and talked to them before once again getting back in the car and leaving, arriving sometime later at the edge of the woods near Tackett's home in Madison, Indiana. Laura Tackett led them to a garbage dump off a logging road in a densely forested area. But Tony Lawrence and Hope Rippey were frightened, and they just stayed in the car because nothing good happens in the forest that late at night.
Yeah.
Tackett grabbed both of Shearer's hands and held them behind her back so Lovelace could hit her. Shearer begged them to let her go and swore to stay away from Heverin, but each plea was answered by Lovelace's command for her to shut up.
This fucking Lori Tackett, she just met this Melinda the same night. Now she's helping her commit assaulting this girl.
Right, yeah. Suddenly, Lovelace punched Shearer as hard as she could in the stomach. Ooh. And Shearer collapsed to the ground.
That's not cricket.
Through gasping breaths, Shearer begged them to stop hurting her. Her cries fell upon deaf ears. Lovelace picked her up by the hair and repeatedly slammed her head into Lovelace's knee.
Damn.
Yeah, they was really cruel to this little girl.
The multiple blows caused Shearer's braces to cut her lips and blood flowed from her mouth. Hope Rippey came out of the car to hold down Shearer. Lovelace and Tackett took turns stabbing Shearer in the chest.
The fuck? They went from kneeing her in the face to stabbing her in the chest?
They then strangled her with a rope until she was unconscious, placed her in the trunk of the car, and told the other two girls that Shearer was dead. The girls drove to Tackett's nearby home and went inside to drink soda and clean themselves up. These fucking parents. When they realized Shanda Shearer was screaming in the trunk, Tackett went out with a paring knife and stabbed her several more times, coming back a few minutes later covered with blood. After she washed, Tackett told the girls' futures... Oh, told the girls' futures with her rune stones.
Yeah, I could probably told her future after.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah.
At 2:30 in the morning, Lawrence and Rippy stayed behind as Tackett and Lovelace drove to the nearby town of Conn. Is it Conn?
Yeah, that's what I had the Wrath.
The Wrath was
Wrath
there?
Conn.
Yeah.
Wrath Conn.
Yeah, sure. During the drive, Shanda Shearer, now in the trunk, continued to make crying and gurgling noises, so Tackett stopped the car.
Oh, that's like the Billy Bates guy in Goodfellas.
They yeah, kind
in the trunk
of.
Thought
yeah.
he was dead.
Yeah.
When they opened the trunk, this little girl sat up, covered in blood with her eyes rolled back in her head, but unable to speak. So Tackett beat her with a tire iron until she was silent.
Lovelace, see, I can't figure out what Tackett's, what she has.
Tackett was just mean.
Yeah, I mean, she had no skin in the game. I mean, she wasn't her girlfriend. She just met Melinda that same night.
Lovelace and Tackett returned to Tackett's house just before daybreak to clean up again. Rippy asked about Shearer, and Tackett laughingly described torture. The conversation woke up Tackett's mother, who yelled at her daughter for being out late and bringing home the girls, so Tackett agreed to take them home. She drove to the burn pile, where they opened the trunk to stare at Shearer. Now, explain what a burn pile is.
I believe that's where they caught her on fire.
Well, no, but you have... Some people have burn barrels, they have burn piles, where they just throw refuse or, you know, whatever else. Usually it has to be out in the country for it to be legal. But you throw all your, you know, sticks and leaves and all those kinds of things on there, and that's where you burn them to get rid of them.
Right.
So they've got a burn pile somewhere. They found a burn pile, and they opened the trunk. When they opened the trunk to stare at Shearer, Lawrence refused. Rippy sprayed Shearer with Windex and taunted, "You bitch, you're not looking so hot now, are you? Now let's take her pants off and get to it, ladies." What the fuck does that mean? Let's see. The girls drove to a gas station, pumped some gas in the car, and bought a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi. Tackett poured out the Pepsi and refilled the bottle with gasoline. They drove north of Madison, past Jefferson Proving Ground, to Lemon Road off U.S. 421, a place that was known to Hope Rippy. Lawrence remained in the car while Tackett and Rippy wrapped Shearer, who was still alive, in a blanket and carried her to a field by a gravel country road. Tackett made Rippy pour gasoline over Shearer, and then they set her on fire.
Ugh.
Melinda Lovelace was not convinced that Shearer was dead, so they returned a few minutes later to pour the rest of the gasoline on her. The girls then went to McDonald's about 9:30 a.m. for breakfast, where they laughed about Shearer's looking like one of the sausages they were eating.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Well, Tony Lawrence, who's now horrified, like, now something's fucked up.
Oh, my, look at this.
Yeah. Phoned a friend and told her about the murder.
Yes, yeah, she seems that the only one there that kind of
has a conscience.
Yeah, has a conscience, yeah.
Laura Tackett then dropped off Lawrence and Rippy at their homes and finally returned to her own home with Lovelace. She told Havron that they had killed Shearer and arranged to pick up Havron later that day. A friend of Lovelace's, Crystal Wathen, came over to her house and they told her what had happened. These bitches can't keep their yappers shut.
No, it didn't say secret very long.
Then the three girls drove to pick up Amanda Havron and bring her back to Lovelace's house, where they told Havron the story, although she didn't believe it was true. Both Havron and Wathen became convinced when Tackett showed them the trunk of the car with Shearer's bloody handprints and socks still in there. Amanda Havron was horrified and asked to be taken home. When they pulled up in front of her house, Lovelace kissed Havron and told her that she loved her and pleaded with her not to tell anyone. Havron promised that she wouldn't before entering her house.
I saw Amanda Havron interviewed. There's an interview with her on YouTube, and just is no remorse at all. I mean, she didn't do anything. I mean, she didn't kill a girl or whatever, but she was involved. As you said, she was older. The little girl was 12 years old. But she, I mean, just showed no compassion for the parents or, you know, or this now dead little girl. Okay, Colonel.
Well, here's where we get into today, try to figure out what the hell happened here. Now, on the morning of Saturday, January 11th, which is my sister's birthday, 1992, Camden, Indiana resident Don Foley and his brother Ralph were on a quail hunting trip in nearby Jefferson County when they spotted a strange object in a soybean field. Now, Ralph's first thought was that...
Was it a soybean?
Huh?
If it was a strange object, it wasn't a soybean then.
No, it might have been a tofu bean.
It was an orange.
Ralph's first thought was that the object was a body, though logic dictated that it was something else. Even so, the men went in for a closer look. At first glance, it appeared to be a rubber blow-up doll that someone had discarded and burned. Well, you know what? Sometimes the romance is gone between you and your rubber blow-up doll, and you just got to move on and get a different one. So, you know, that's what they thought happened. So anyway, but upon closer inspection, the reality became horribly apparent to him, Timmy. The object was not a doll, but the charred remains of a human body, Tim. Now, apart from a pair of panties that the old man over there couldn't grab up and sniff, the body was naked and very burnt up from the waist up. Now, the legs of the victim, they were spread as if they'd been posed, and the arms were stretched skyward with clenched fists, like there was, you know, some kind of posing going on there. And the victim appeared to be a young woman, but the chest had been burned so badly that it was difficult to tell. Now, if the chest had been burned badly, and she was naked, laying there with her legs spread, don't know why they'd have to look at the chest to see if she... But
apparently they couldn't even get fingerprints off of her because her fingers were all burned.
Yeah, no, this just says she was burned from the waist up so badly. And I guess if you got caught on fire, you'd peck a burn up.
Yeah.
That'd be the first to go. There's a lot of stuff in there. So, now, the most horrifying of all was the victim's face. The eyes were empty, without color, and the mouth was wide open, exposing teeth tightly clenched on the victim's tongue. It was a brutal scene, Timmy, one that they would never forget. Now, 10:55, Chief Deputy Randy Spry from the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office in Madison received Foley's call and set out for Lemon Road. Madison's a very, very quaint little town. I've been there a few times. They have the speedboat races down there every year.
Oh, okay.
The Madison Regatta. But anyway, since there had not been a murder in Jefferson County in over 3 years, and the last one was Earl shot his brother Floyd over the last biscuit, so they didn't, you know, they wasn't really experienced with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But... And the detective, he was a little skeptical that they had a body out there. But after he arrived at the scene, his doubts were erased, and he immediately called headquarters for Sheriff Richard Buck Shipley's presence at the scene. Now, well, you know, when you got a guy like Buck Shipley, this shit's gonna get soft.
It's just now got serious.
Yeah, this shit.
Uncle Buck.
Yeah, this shit got real. Uncle Buck Shipley's there now. Now, it took more than an hour for Shipley to reach this crime scene there from his home in Madison. And at first glance, he was appalled. He had seen a lot of dead bodies in his time on the force, but never one in such a grisly state. It was immediately obvious that the sheriff's office did not have the resources to handle the investigation properly, so Shipley radioed the Indiana State Police for assistance. Indiana State Police Detective Steve Henry and forensic expert Sergeant Curtis Wells arrived at the crime scene just before 1 o'clock. So they were there with Bones,
mm-hmm.
the Bones crew, the CSI people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wells recorded the crime scene with a video camera and took several still photographs. After taking castings of various unknown tire tracks and footprints, he began a cursory examination of the body. With Sergeant Wells'
extensive knowledge of forensics, this man was apparently just a genius, Timmy. Okay. He just had all kinds of forensic knowledge. It was apparent that a flammable substance had been used to destroy evidence. That's you how think? Smart this son of a bitch was.
He was smart.
You know what? What I see here is a big burned up body. I bet they used something flammable.
Well, it's a small town.
You know why? Because they couldn't find a big ass magnifying glass and have the sun come down on her like you do an ant.
I see.
I guess. I don't know.
What happens next?
Well, examining the genitalia of the victim, he noted that the panties had been pulled to one side and the condition of the body indicated some type of anal molestation. Either prior to or immediately after death. Now, that's where, again, you draw the line, Timmy.
Yeah.
So,
this poor little girl.
As Wells was examining the body, Detective Henry discovered a melted plastic bottle containing trace amounts of gasoline lying in the woods nearby. When the coroner arrived at the scene, Wells collected hair samples from the victim and removed a ring from one of her fingers. Looking at the ring, he discovered it was a Jefferson High class ring with the initials SGH engraved. Now, while police were at the crime scene, Stephen Sharon noticed that his daughter was missing. After phoning neighbors and friends all morning, he called his ex-wife, Shonda's mother, at 145, where they filed a missing person report with the Clark County Sheriff. Clark County and Jefferson County are right next to each other,
right,
Timmy.
Right.
Later that evening, Clifton and Glenda Lawrence were spending their Sunday evening watching television when the couple's youngest daughter, 15-year-old Tony, walked through the front door followed by her best friend, Hope, and Hope's parents, Carl and Gloria Ripley, all with very, very solemn faces, Timmy. Before the parents could say a word, Tony began babbling incoherently, obviously upset and stated near shock. Concerned, Clifton instructed Glenda to take Tony to another room while he talked to the Rippies. Carl Rippey told Clifton that the girls had said that they had witnessed a murder that day. He said the details were sketchy, but he felt that they were telling the truth. Now, after
these are the two younger girls.
The two younger girls, yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't really play a part in any of this.
Right.
After absorbing what he just heard, Clifton asked the Rippies to accompany him to the police station. But they said, oh, hell no, we ain't doing that. They want to talk to an attorney.
Yeah, they wanted to lawyer up.
They had to, well, it's probably a good idea.
Well, maybe not. Wait till you get into it.
Well, it was just after 9 o'clock when the Lawrences arrived at the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office in Madison. Upon learning that a young girl and family claimed to have information regarding a murder in Jefferson County, Sheriff Shipley quickly ushered him into the office. Now, Tony Tackett stated that she had spent the previous night with two friends, Hope Rippey and Lori Tackett. The three had driven to New Albany in Tackett's car and picked up Melinda Lovelace, 16, a friend of Tackett's who Tony had not met before. Tony Lawrence, yes. Yeah. So shall we recap?
Yes.
They have found the body.
Yeah.
The two girls have gotten freaked out.
The two younger girls.
The two younger girls. Now, we got the one girl, her parents notice she's missing, and they show up at the parents' house saying,
right,
you know, this is what happened. The parents go crazy. They get them to the police station. That's where we're at right now.
Okay.
Now, upon learning that a young girl and her family claim to have information regarding a murder in Jefferson County, Sheriff Shipley, Big Buck, quickly ushered them into his office. Tony Lawrence, we got to that. After picking up Lovelace, they had gone to a hardcore punk rock show for a few hours and then headed back toward home. Tony said that on the way back, Lovelace began talking about a girl named Shonda, saying that Shonda was trying to steal her girl and she wanted to kill her. That's what Tony said.
Okay.
Tony said Lovelace began talking about right. this stuff. Now, before the Lawrences left the police station here, Timmy, they introduced Sheriff Buck to the Rippey's plan to get an attorney.
Hope Ripley's family, parents, said
Rippey's family is going to lawyer up. They yes. don't want anything. As she was deciding what to do next, Shipley received a missing report from Clark County. Shonda Sher, 12 years old, had been reported missing by her parents some 8 hours earlier.
Yeah, so as the parents, they're in here discussing this murder. this girl, who they don't know who it is at this point, they get this message that this is a missing person.
Yeah, and it describes a girl 5 foot tall, 100 pounds. And
God, she was tiny.
Yeah, just a tiny little thing.
A cute little girl.
Now, Shively then started the paperwork to get warrants for the arrest of Laurie Tackett and Melinda Lovelace. Now, as investigators rushed to get the paperwork in order, they received word that the teeth of the victim matched the dental records of Shonda. No matter which direction the case went now, the hardest part was Sheriff Shively had to notify Shonda's parents. They were excited at first when the police contacted them. Now, they were certain that the little girl that had been found... They were certain that their little girl had been found and they would be reunited with her. However, as soon as they saw the look on Detective Henry's face, they knew something terrible had happened to me. Hmm. There's no right way to tell their parents that their child is dead. I mean, it's just not possible. So, but unfortunately, that is what this man had to do. And, regardless of the eloquence or sensitivity of whatever messenger you send in there, Timmy, the impact on the family remains the same. They can be kind, they can be cold, it don't matter. They just, they lost a daughter.
Yeah.
Now, when Detective Henry told them Shonda was gone, Jackie became completely hysterical. It was almost 2 a.m. by the time Sheriff Shively and Detective Henry acquired arrest warrants for Tackett and Lovelace. Lori Tackett's vehicle had been spotted at Melinda's mother's house, so it was there that investigators decided to serve these warrants. When the two men knocked on the door, Melinda's mother, Margie, answered. They quickly explained why they were there and asked her where the girls were. Margie said upstairs. The investigators went up to Melinda's room. Entering, they found them both in bed asleep. Henry yelled for the two to get your ass up. You under arrest, is what he told them. As they rose from their slumber, he informed them that they were both being arrested on charges of murder. They were led out of the house in handcuffs and transported to the police station, Timmy. Mm-hmm. They were booked and jailed. All four girls were charged as adults. To avoid the death penalty, the girls decided, fuck this, I'll take a plea bargain. The court agreed to consider the girls' mitigating circumstances.
What mitigating circumstances?
Well, all four girls had pretty troubled backgrounds with physical or sexual abuse happening by a parent or another adult. Now, Hope Rippey, Tony Lawrence, and Lori Tackett had histories of self-harming behavior. Tackett was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and suffered
like Brandy.
Like Brandy, and suffered from hallucinations, much like Brandy.
Yeah.
First of all, bullshit. There are plenty of people that get raised in shitty backgrounds that don't turn around and kill.
And there's people who have different mental illnesses that don't turn around and kill, too.
Yeah. So, fuck them.
Well, I'm just reading
the news.
You're
just reporting the news.
I'm just reporting the news. I didn't make these decisions now. Now, Melinda Lovelace, the ringleader in this attack, had the most extensive history of abuse and mental health issues. And, you know...
What did you call her? Linda Lovelace?
Yeah, Linda Lovelace.
It's Melinda Lovelace.
Melinda Lovelace.
Melinda Lovelace.
Without love.
No love. In early 1993, Melinda and Laura Tackett were sentenced to 60 years in prison for this murder. Now, for her part, Hope Rippey was sentenced to 60 years with 10 years suspended for mitigating circumstances, plus 10 years of medium supervision probation. On appeal, the judge reduced it to 35 years. Now, in exchange for her cooperation, Tony Lawrence was allowed to plead guilty to one count of criminal confinement and was sentenced to a maximum of 20 years. And this seems harsh to me because it seems like the two young girls were just kind of caught up in this and didn't even know what was about to occur.
And she...
That Hope girl, she was running her yapper.
Well, this one... Oh, yeah. But this one... didn't lawyer up. They went right to the police, and so she gets the lighter sentence. Still 20 years, but she doesn't. And you'll get into that. Continue, Colonel.
Just 2 days after the sentencing, Shonda's parents filed a $1 billion lawsuit against all four girls. The suit was filed after a Louisville television station reported Tackett was negotiating to sell her story to a movie production company. Mm-hmm. And considering she had some other offers she had received. Now, Shonda's parents never expected to collect any of the money and wanted to discourage the girls from profiting at their daughter's expense. Clark County Circuit Judge Daniel Donahue agreed and quickly issued a temporary injunction blocking the girls from making any deals to sell their story. Now you got that law that puts it in effect. You can't profit from anything that you do.
I never profit from anything I did.
I know.
No, no. The aftermath of this was Tony Lawrence was released on December 14th, 2000, after serving 9 years.
All right. So the one that cooperated got 9 years. Okay.
Yeah.
She was one of the young ones then.
She's 40 years old. Nobody knows her current whereabouts. That'd be a good one for Charlie and Allie. Look her up. Let's find her.
Well, I mean, she's now out. So doing something productive.
Okay. Well, yeah, she got penis now. So
all right,
she's
continue. 40 years old. We don't know that. Continue.
Well, she's 40 years old.
Oh, I see.
You know, so.
Because all women turn 40.
Yeah.
Because he's so funny.
Now, on April 28, 2006, Hope Rippey was released from Indiana Women's Prison after serving 14 years of her original sentence.
And you know they all got into some lesbianism in there.
Oh, you know, they went in there as little kids.
Yeah.
So, she remains on supervised parole. Now, Melinda Lovelace and Laura Tackett, they're serving their original sentence at the Indiana Women's Prison in Indianapolis. Maybe Timmy can become pen pals with one of them.
No, I would love to. Are you, when you're done, I'll tell you something. Go ahead.
Oh, you've withheld information once again on
it. Because I watched another documentary on it.
Given Indiana's policy of reducing sentence by a day for every day served with good behavior, both women should be released from prison in 2022.
And that's not that long.
When Lovelace is 46 and Tackett is 47, and they should both have fairly pronounced penises. Shanda's father, guess what happened to her father, Devil?
I don't know. Tell me.
To recap, because Timmy has already said this, he became quite depressed and drank himself to death.
Ah.
Yeah, so that really had some...
I mean, that's all we have for that story.
Well, Timmy. Let me just say that since... The father's death, the mother of Shonda reached out. She had heard that Melinda Lovelace in prison, women's prison, now was training sight dogs.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. So every year she buys a dog for Melinda to train, even though Melinda had killed her daughter.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah, she took some criticism from it, but she said that it's something her daughter would have wanted her to do, so she's trying to see some good coming out of this.
I'd buy her a deranged pit bull.
That's kind of a bad idea.
A rabid one.
But it's a pretty fucked up story, don't you think?
Yeah, girls
are very fucked up.
It kind of reminds me kind of the, I mean, different circumstances, but in Indiana, the Sylvia Likens.
Well, yeah, that group thing.
Yeah, group think. Colonel... I know you wanted to cover a story.
I did a script, and I thought that
so we're going to call this your segment, Colonel's Corner. So you have a short script that you want to go over.
Well, I shortened it up because I know that you wanted to, you know. Okay,
before we do that, Brandy, do you have any final thoughts on the death of Shonda Scherer?
I remember hearing about this. It's very sad. These girls are stupid, crazy.
Colonel, you have any final thoughts on this story?
It's horrific. I mean, the cruelty. But you know what?
They burned her alive. You know? Oh, my God.
You go back to when these horrible things happen to you when you are young, you just lose all empathy. You're not human.
But at what point do you take personal responsibility?
When you destroy a person, and that's what, you know... people did to a couple of these girls. They just destroyed them. They destroyed their humanity.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that they didn't go through some shit, but what I'm saying is, so, you know, by that, you know, on that token, anybody
I don't say you let them go free.
But anybody that's got something fucked up, I mean, you got people dying by you left and right. Constantly somebody's dying that you know. And, you know, you're not killing people. You're not, you know, the angel of death or anything. Well, you might be, but you're not intentionally causing this stuff. So, I mean, you know.
I'm trying not to.
We as a country have gotten away from taking personal responsibility, and I think it's bullshit.
Well, I think that, you know, I think that they had to take into account some of the horrible things that happened to them, but I think that, yeah, you're right, that you, you know, no matter what happens to you, somewhere in your, somewhere deep down, you know right from wrong.
Sure.
You know.
And just the whole relationship aspect of it. I mean, when something happens like that, when you're like 12, 13, and you break up with someone or someone breaks up with you, that's the most important thing in the world.
Oh, I know. It's devastating.
And yes. You can't see beyond that. Like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to graduate high school. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to meet a lot of different girls or guys. All right. So, Colonel, you had a story you wanted to share.
I got a story about the death of Gary Hoy, Timmy.
Okay. Is this a story that you researched?
It is. It's one I researched in depth. I actually flew up to Canada to take a look at...
what happened? Get to the...
This is a case of auto defenestration, Timmy.
What is that? Sweet. What is that?
Well, I'll tell you after I finish my story.
Okay.
Gary Hoy was an attorney for the law firm of Holden Day Wilson in Toronto. He had a group of articling students, which are basically accounting students, that he was trying to prove were innocent. They were accused of breaking some glass. Now, he tried to prove that this could not have happened. So in a conference room on the 24th story of his... of a building, he ran and threw himself into the glass to show that it was not going to break.
Oh, it broke.
It broke, and he fell 24 stories to his death.
I don't think it broke, did it? Didn't it?
Well, the whole frame came out.
The whole frame came out. The whole frame came out. The glass didn't break.
Yeah, the glass held up, so he was right. As he was on his way down, he said, I told you so.
Yeah.
A true story from the colonel. So
he landed on, he hit the ground at about 90 miles an hour.
That's not good.
Yeah, it was not pleasant. And self-defenestration, Timmy, that is the term for jumping out of a window.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that.
It's the act of jumping or propelling oneself or causing oneself to fall out of a window.
Like that. I like that song, 24 Floors by the Main.
And cool, this was, he came 24 floors.
Yeah. Maybe that's why was their inspiration from that song, 24 Floors by the Man.
It could be.
Yeah. Okay, Colonel, let's get a shout out. Let's get the show on the road.
All right, Timmy. Well, let's see. Who are we going to start with, Timmy?
It's up to you, Colonel.
Well, we always start with Tasha.
Lovely Tasha out there in California. They're getting ready to secede from the union out there. And,
they are. And I'm coming out there with you, Tasha.
Right.
Yeah, I'm coming out Tasha, there with you. Can,
they just legalized the weed out there?
Yeah.
No. Was it? Yeah. They just said, fuck it. You don't even need to have a medical license anymore.
I think they did it in Minnesota, too, didn't they?
So, Tasha, can you put us up, three of us,
when
you guys secede?
And Jeff Girdley, of course. Sam Hildebrand. Angie Ball. Now, I'm going to say Linda Middleton here because we always give Jennifer a shout-out on the thing, but I don't know that we always carry it.
Yeah, hi, Linda.
Of course, Missy Dean Horton, Britt and Chris Sass, Celine, Jeff Chestnut and Teresa Slavin.
Hey, Teresa.
Tommy Boom Boom.
Tommy Boomer Shine.
Chanda, I follow Chanda on Facebook. She's a pretty interesting person. She's got some very good insights. Chanda and Larry. I like to throw the whole Trowbridge clan in together. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Wentz, of course.
He generalizes.
I know.
Phyllis Munson and Colton. You know, we always got to give Donna Curran a shout out with that wonderful pup she's got. Brian and crazy ass Lisa Lawton. Brian's normal. Lisa crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia Meyer, of course.
girl we all know and love, who did I see on her Facebook page she's in a relationship this week? Fallon?
I'm not sure.
If you are, congratulations. And if he doesn't treat you well, you call the colonel. We got to get out there and give him some colonel justice. Katya?
Katya over there in Denmark.
If Tasha don't let us come and live with her, we're coming with you, Katya. All right? We got Monica D. Monica D'Agostino. Of course, Sandy September, Byron Snellings, and Bridget Clavey. We got Denny Mack, of course, Angela Cobes, Amber Krupp, Gina Spillane and Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney and Michael, of course, and Wonder, Jamie T, Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, Sunstar, of course, Tara V. And who, if you needed a spy, Timmy, who would you call?
Bond.
Jean Bond.
Mm-hmm.
We got Lydia and Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, of course, Jeff Appel, Christine, what, Timmy?
I don't know.
Christine?
Bourgeois.
Christine, yes. And, of course, my own personal favorite, Katie! Hey, Katie!
Jesus.
Timmy? Moorhead.
Oh, Moorhead, yes. Katie Moorhead.
God.
I can't help it. I try to stop myself. I cannot help myself.
Ugh.
Mary, Katie Moorhead, thank you for following us. We got Rebecca Montanle. And we have a Montana, because we can meet her little friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ms. Montana, hello to you, and Rebecca Montanle. Mike Eisenhower, Daniel Fredrickson, Andy, Valerio, Nancy Palomino, Jennifer Hawkins, Tara Nee, Lindsay O'Brien, we got that one that we never did get right, Sinatra, Eddie Rushing, your handler, Sammy James, of course, Jason Dykes, I'm getting a picture out to him. I got overwhelmed with requests for pictures, Timmy. So I'm trying to get them all out there.
Yeah, I hope you'll follow through.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Amy Payne, Tyra Jenkins. Let's see, we got a very nice email from Charlie Chase.
Yeah, Charlie.
Here's another. Nice now we talked about the on-site. Here's another good. If you want a good podcast, a funny podcast to listen to, we got Bobby, and his podcast is called BJ on the Weekends. Much like the Colonel's house.
I doubt it.
Hell, I'd be happy.
BJ,
with that.
I'd be happy. Yeah, and we're gonna have one. I'm gonna have one called Colonel BJ on Tuesdays.
Yeah, BJ on the Weekends at bjontheweekends.com.
Yeah,
he sent us a nice note, asked us to give him a shout out to his new podcast, and I listened to it, and it's pretty funny. So check it out.
So we got M Waterfall. Oh, we got some birthdays, Timmy. We got some birthdays we got
to
cover.
Did you say hi to Michael and Sydney?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you say hi to Beverly? I've, like, tuned you out.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Could you do that?
Kim Taylor. She graduates, I think, next quarter.
We got birthdays. M. Waterfall. Amber Scoville. Cindy Overstreet. And we, of course, went over Jennifer's son's. Hunter.
Yeah, happy birthday all.
Now, this is where things get very, very sad. Devil, you lost your mother-in-law, Dave's. And how is Dave doing?
He's all right.
Lady Beverly lost her father.
Well, sorry.
It was sudden. It was unexpected. And Lady Beverly, you know that we all here on the show, we care deeply about you.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, we are thinking about you, and if there's anything we can do at all for you, you know how to get a hold of us. And, of course, we've got the Colonel Squad, Angie Ball and Nicola, little Sarah Mimosa, of course, Jim Burdick and Karen Barnes, Janet Fitzgerald and Francis Darton, Jessica Williams, Amanda Bocce Ball, who plays Pokemon 2, Shannon. We got a new listener, and Jen.
Yeah, and Jen left us a review on iTunes.
On Thank iTunes, yeah. We got the Heathers, of course. Heather Hall, Heather Powell. And Cindy Overstreet Hamilton, of course. Maria Barber. Jennifer Potts. Christina Montana is who I was thinking about. Me, my little friend. And that's what I've got, Timmy.
All right. Well, thank you, Colonel.
William Trow. Did I get William Trow and Denny Mack and Byron Snellings?
I've never seen anybody read as fucked up as you.
Yeah.
You're all over the goddamn place.
You know, why you come back with that attitude,
Jesus
though?
Jesus
I mean, Christ. You come back, you look at it. See, this was disturbing to me about you. All right? Now, I come down here, I see you in the morning, and I look, I'm like, oh, look at the devil. Because normally, you know how she comes in here. Mm-hmm. She got her flip-flops on. She got some kind of all fucked up shit on.
I do not have my flip-flops on.
So she comes
some
in.
Some days you do.
Some days you do, goddammit. So anyway, I come in here, I look down the hallway, I see the devil. She's smiling at me even. She's smiling, and that creeps me out. Because I think, oh, shit, I'm going to walk into my office, something's going to blow up, it's filled with rattlesnakes or whatever. She's smiling at me like, go walk into your office. And I'm like, Devil, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, man, you're looking good there, Devil. How you feeling? Whatever. And she's nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
She's got this new haircut. You got some highlights put in there, too, didn't you, Devil?
Mm-hmm.
Got some highlights in there. Your boobs is a little smaller.
Okay.
Okay? But that's a good boob.
You know,
boob Punky, sweater.
Punky Brewster had
breast reduction.
Yeah. I'm having penis reduction soon.
So, but anyway, the devil got on a good boob sweater and all dressed up, got a makeup on, and now you're being nasty to me. Now you turn on me, like the devil that you are.
I just said I don't understand how you can get through. You could get through a list if you actually read the list, but you're over here, you're over here.
Well,
that's
know,
how you don't know if you
like
got anybody or not.
I like to change it up a little
Sweet
bit.
Sweet Jesus.
Okay, so Brandy, where can people find us?
Well, you can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, join our page. We have a page where we interact with listeners. It's called History Dweebs, the podcast. Join our group, and we'll interact with you as well. And that's where most of our folks that we're giving shout-outs to, that's how we met them. It's a fun group, and come on in. It's always a good time, and join us.
Uh-huh. Facebook, there's iTunes.
Yes, if you...
and we, of course, you know...
If you go to iTunes, please leave us a review. That's how people find us. We appreciate it.
And because the devil is not here, it has not been here... We saved, of course, the last shout out for the devil.
What?
The last shout out. You gotta do the last shout out before you leave.
Okay. I got it.
I'm just saving it for you.
Thank you.
It's a special honor.
It is. But Twitter?
Yes, at HistoryDweebs1.
And then Stitcher and Libsyn and we don't
have. Yeah, we're all over the place. Yeah. We're more popular than Captain Kangaroo.
But we don't have a YouTube channel.
Not yet, not
or ever. Working audio equipment at this point.
No,
so,
but we.
What do I have right in my hand? I got the instruction manual
okay.
for it.
But well, I would also.
Had 2 weeks to read it.
Yeah, seriously, I expected this shit to work when I got here.
Well, so did I.
I would like to thank and give a shout out to Miss Dottie Scott, because I really do appreciate these microphones. It was a lovely surprise, and I'm going to give a shout out to her.
Yes, thanks, Mom. Casey going to be joining us anytime soon?
Casey's all over the place. We'll get him when we can get him.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. And we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Listeners.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.